It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
And I hope you all had a calm, reflective Memorial Day weekend. It's the 27th day of May, 2019. This program, unlike almost any other progressive broadcasting, I think, today, is live. Yes. Sit back, relax if you already aren't, and, prepare for a conversation. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, this is the Memorial Day 2019 edition of The Horn. And I had a couple of people say Happy Memorial Day to me. And if you know what Memorial Day actually means, Happy Memorial Day is kind of a non sequitur, isn't it? Feels like it to me. But I reflected. We reflected. Went up and visited the grave of the boy who didn't come home from France. Thought on him. Thought about the boy who didn't come home from the Battle of the Bulge. His grave is down the mountain, a right smart bit. He was in the glider infantry. Yeah. Neither one of them made, you know, We forget that the United States didn't do, I mean, there was that North Africa campaign, and then Sicily, and then Italy. But for the most part, the European campaign lasted, from D-Day to the fall of the Third Reich, didn't last a year. And from the moment that my uncle got in country to the time that he was no more, I don't think he lasted 3 months. The other one, my great-uncle, he lasted maybe five. The last correspondence that was ever had to him was a note that he sent home to my mother saying, "They're telling us we'll be home by Christmas. This war is almost over." Then came the Battle of the Bulge. And he made it through the biggest part of that and was killed in January 1945. So I did something, and many of us did something, that Donald Trump couldn't be bothered to do. This is two Memorial Days in a row that he has spent running away from the reminder of what a disgusting yellow coward he is. Man, I bet if he takes his shirt off, the yellow stripe covers his entire voluminous belly. It was last year when he wouldn't show up to honor the Americans who died in World War One. This year, he spent it not honoring the Americans who died by going to Japan and playing golf and cheating at golf, I have no doubt. Yeah. But I'm getting ahead of myself. This program always begins with gratitude. Today is no different. Thanks going out to Susan and Julie, and to Robert in Australia, to Peter and Melton, Michael in Madison. Thank you all very kindly. Those are the to James and Kay and Mark and those are our and to Lady B. And so the fundraising goal to for the evening is at 2:45. Again, that pain in the butt. Five means, you know, ten at 24:50 or 24 and a half people at 10, whatever. Thank you very kindly. Brother Deacon Asa says the Moran brain train is firing on both cylinders, Conductor Kincaid. Good. So, because the White Rose Society stream has been kind of crashy all weekend long, I've had to restart it several times. But, yeah, $245, and we'll try to knock that down and get closer to done with the month of May. The PayPal button, of course, is over at headon.live. Just click on contribute, and it'll take you right through. Also at headon.live, the chat room tab. Pick out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Otto and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed folded space on this Memorial Day to become Man Cave. And remember, the easiest way to get the podcast is at podcast.headon.live. That the website is a great one-stop shop. You can follow my Twitter, my Twitter feed as well. It's all right there for you. And yes, with the reference to Moran Monday, it is. It really is. And God knows we've got them. And, you know, there's no way I was going to miss a Moran Monday. No, generally speaking, this program is live unless I'm on the road or somebody's at the doctor. I'm taking somebody to the doctor, or I'm too sick to get to the microphone. Those are the basic reasons why I don't do the program. Not a lot of vacations. This is kind of what I live for. And so we'll be having hopefully some conversation this evening. But let's get this. Let's get this started in proper Moran Monday fashion.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Ah, yes, you hear it, I hear it. Hurry, hurry, hurry to the strains of the halcyon strains of the calliope and the legs a-pumping away to provide it with the necessary steam or whatever it is that runs a halcyon calliope. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas reside every manner of Moran under the sun and known to humankind. birchers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, Republicans all and all waiting for your stunned and amazed consideration. Yes, indeed. You can't tell the program, you can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons you just can't tell them much. For less than half the cost of a McDonald's hash brown patty in the morning, you can support the Moran Monday tent and every other program on the horn. That's right, $10 a month, less than the cost of half of a McDonald's hash brown patty, and I gotta tell you, I think this is the better bargain. Yes, 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 indeed. Tell your friends, tell your kinfolk, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, kiddies and cousins, all about the Moran Monday tent here on the Horn. And stop throwing golf balls at those little goldfish bowls in the vain hope of winning someday a little baby iguana that'll grow up and eat your German Shepherd. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. And a quick warning, behind the thin cybernetic veil do reside Morans of all stripes. And please keep a close hand on, oh, children, watches, wallets, purses, jewelry, even that little iguana that you won throwing goldfish bowls, ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because the morons can get grabby. Head for the hills, you'll be up to your armpits in morons. You will. You really, really will. Morons? Oh, yeah. We got them, we got them by the plentiful. Where to begin? Let's see. Well, why don't we just start with Republicans as a matter of general principle. You know, if there's something stupid that's running around the United States of America, the Republicans apparently are susceptible to catching it. Now, for some reason or another, I thought maybe measles was like flu. You know, flu's one of those happens in the winter kind of things, and gosh, it was beautiful today. I went over to Summersville Lake to meet up with our daughter and our granddaughter for a little bit, and Agnes got out in the sun and splashed around in the lake with the grandbabies. I don't go in the lake, fish pee in that. But no, it was a lovely day. High, puffy clouds, and either some coal baron or dentist or something had the biggest damned houseboat out I've ever seen on Summersville Lake. But people were kayaking on the flat, glassy water. People were paddleboarding, barbecuing, and just generally having a big old hillbilly good time. And I even got a little bit of sun on the bald spot on the back of my head there. It's a tad warm right now. If there was hair there, it might even be bleached now. But no. It was a beautiful day. And warm. I mean, even here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, it's 85 in here right now. That's why the radio you are now listening to is naked. Oh, and there goes a blow amidships to dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. But yes, it's naked radio this evening. So, you know, warm weather comes and the flu risk and stuff goes down, but apparently not measles. Maine has become, over the weekend, as of the weekend, the 25th state in the United States to confirm a case of measles. Still no measles in West Virginia. That's a good thing. There are 535 measles cases, most of them in the Williamsburg area of Brooklyn in New York. And, like I said, if there's something stupid Republicans of late will glom onto it. In this case, the ultimate, well, one of the ultimate morantities, anti-vaxxerism. What's that, Randy? Randy, I think that's on your end, because Brother Deacon Asa tells me we're running hot and true on all the streams, so I think, yeah. Anyway. Sorry, I had to mute the mic there while I opened up a beverage. You want a Fresca? Anyhow, don't be surprised if by the time the Republican National Convention comes around in 2020, there isn't a stirring rebuke of trying not to get infectious diseases. Because all over the country, and this is sort of a blanket Moran nomination, all over the country, Republicans are howling that freedom is under attack. Guess who's attacking freedom? The people who don't want a measles epidemic. That's who. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Republicans in New York are going all anti-vaxxer. And in Oregon, as we reported, me and that mouse in my pocket, they screamed that Democrats were forcing vaccines down their freedom-loving throats. And then there's California, where there are big state, California. And California has done a pretty good job of eliminating Republicans. But there are 10 Republicans in the California Senate, and all 10 of them last week voted against a bill that would have eliminated so-called exemptions from vaccination that inured to the benefit of the kind of stupid people who put rocks in stupid women who put rocks in their vaginas, or stupid men who, you get the idea. Matt Bevin, who barely survived his gubernatorial primary last week in Kentucky, he said making people get vaccinations was un-American. So at this rate, I would predict that by the time we get to the Republican National Convention in 2020, a scant year away, we will find a platform plank decrying the concept of legally requiring people to get their children vaccinated so they won't catch diseases that can possibly kill them. Because freedom! Wolverines! Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Goddamn stupid people. They're not just goddamn stupid people. Goddamn stupid Republicans. Yeah. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Happy Memorial Day, Lamar says. Being from a family who has served, family members who served in World War II, my father who served in the Korean War, and a first cousin who served in Vietnam. And a daughter and brother-in-law in the Gulf War. Well, to be president of America, Lamar says, and not be there at the Tomb of the Unknown, is just sad. And anyone who follows Trump, please, you're not for the troops. Stop saying you love the troops. It hurts the Americans whose family members die and have problems following the wars, those Republicans who will not help those returning veterans. Just stop it all, please. I get it. Oh, and by the way, the White House, because they think we're morons, last week, Nitwit Nero and Melanoma went and shambled around Arlington National Cemetery just sort of randomly looking at graves. For all I can tell, they were trying to find the people who died in Vietnam so that Donnie Bonespurs could stay home. Fucking chicken shit coward. And they took pictures there, but today they released it saying, they released videos saying, oh, we went to the, you know, we went to Arlington. Yeah, I guess he can fold space too because he's busy playing golf in Japan. Are there any golf courses in Japan? Are we good? How much is this one costing us? Probably wasn't a good idea to have a photo opportunity with him and a sumo wrestler. He, Trump, was supposed to award the trophy to the winning sumo wrestler. But the guy who's in such great shape had a hard time lifting the trophy off the table. And then, of course, taking a photo of the sumo wrestler next to Donald Trump somehow managed to make the sumo wrestler look trim. Yeah, I know. So, you know, we've got a pretty good start, but we've got a nomination for the New York Times as well. And I don't like gooning on media outlets, but in this case, it's irresistible. And beyond irresistible, it's damned well deserved. Over the weekend, under the byline of one Maggie Haberman, the New York Times presented an article about the existential crisis of Hope Hicks, former advisor to the president, a beautiful white lady, and they accompanied it with something that can only be described as a glamour shot. Now, I'm pretty sure that the photo morgue of the files of the New York Times have more than enough photographs of Hope Hicks. But they went to the extraordinary length of setting up a shoot as if the New York Times was goddamn Vogue or something, and gave her a fancy schmancy, or I don't know who did it, but, you know, she had the smoky eyes, and she had her hair pulled back in a not really very messy bun. And they shot her in profile. And Maggie Haberman, who is a stenographer for this regime, wrote a piece in which she described Hope Hicks almost in the same terms that you would describe a victim of something. It was utterly ridiculous. And the existential crisis was whether or not she would honor the subpoena that had been served upon her by the Congress of the United States. You know what? That's not an existential crisis. That is a requirement of the law relative to living and succeeding and even profiting from life in these United States. But for Hope Hicks, because the Attorney General of the United States is in the bag for dictatorship,
she could show up.
And, of course, then on social media, I saw the usual parade of people hollering, goddamn Democrats, goddamn weak Democrats, won't make me, why won't they make her show up? Completely oblivious to the fact that they can't. And Hopi is back in New York, and she's not likely to come into the purview, or the jurisdiction, more importantly, of the Capitol Police, and consequently, there's not much the sergeant-at-arms can do about dragging her in to testify. The only person who can enforce a contempt citation for ignoring a subpoena is a guy who himself is one fine hair on a froggy's ass away from being in contempt himself. And I'm speaking, of course, by virtue of the reference to an amphibian, of William Barr. So, New York Times, Moran nomination. Plenty to go around, though. Lots to go around. How about this? How about Precious Lindsey Graham? That down there at the ancestral home of smoldering Chode. Precious Lindsey has announced that he's going to introduce him a bill. Now, mind you, the House of Representatives has been doing great guns work, something on the order of sending 80 bills a month over the last 5 months to the Senate, where chinless Mitch McConnell does absolutely nothing with them because, well, chinless Mitch McConnell doesn't care much about America. Chinless Mitch McConnell cares about chinless Mitch McConnell. But Lindsey showed up on Face the Nation to talk about our immigration problem. Yes. Curiously enough, there's the only people who think that we have a crisis at the southern border are people who are racist about and xenophobic about the people who live below the southern border. He went on Sunday Morning Futures, which is one of those shows over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And said, we got a perfect storm now because of broken laws. Word is out on the street in Central America, because Lindsey gets down to Central America so fucking much. If you bring a minor child with you to America, we can only hold a minor child for 20 days, where we release everybody, including the adults. They never show up for the hearing because it's 3 years from now. You can only hold a minor for 20 days. We're going to go to 100 days. That's right. Lindsey Graham, who once fulminated so profusely on the necessity of cleansing the Oval Office when the occupant was a Democrat who got a blowjob, but suddenly now can't find it in him to do the same thing when the occupant is a Republican, who simply tap dances on the Constitution, defecates on it, wheezes on it, and then it plays in it with his hand, tiny, tiny little hands. Well, no, not so much. Now, Lindsey Graham has decided that children aren't spending enough time in concentration camps in the United States. And by the way, word is out on the street in Central America. Central America is not a country. We don't have a huge problem with Nicaraguan immigrants, migrants. There's not a big Costa Rican migrant problem, Panamanian migrant problem.
not even such a big deal with Mexico.
Mostly it's Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. The three Central American countries we have done the most to come near destroying. So no, word is not out on the street in Central America. But there's something out there called the Flores Agreement. It goes back to 1997. It was an agreement reached in the wake of a Supreme Court decision about what we do with children who come into federal custody. Migrant children. And the agreement is the so-called 20-day rule. And the Trump regime has been having kittens with crocheted tails over the 20-day rule for a while now, because they would like to just keep little children locked up in dog cages indefinitely, because they're Republicans, who are, of course, pro-life. Every life is a precious gift from God, to quote Kay Ivey, of governor of Alabama, right before she signed the death warrant of a 19-year-old, of a man who was convicted when he was 19 years old and was severely developmentally delayed. But Lindsay, doing the bidding of the White House, wants to make sweeping changes to our immigration laws, and in particular to the asylum system. Under his bill, he said, most importantly, you can no longer apply for asylum at our border. If you're from Central America, again, which is not a country, you have to apply for asylum at a consulate in your country. So let me see here. Your country is falling apart. Your next-door neighbor was found shot in the head in the street in front of your house. And you know they're coming after you. But instead of just doing what any prudent parent would do, that is, grab your kids and run, no, you have to take a little day trip down to Tegucigalpa or Guatemala City or San Salvador and visit the U.S. consulate and say, pretty please, I'd like to not have my children shot in the head. Jesus Christ. We're going to set up a consulate in Mexico. You can apply. If you don't apply there, you're going to be turned down when you get to our border. So we're going to change the underlying broken laws to stop what I think is literally an invasion of people from Central America. Literally an invasion. You know, generally speaking, when people invade you, they come with guns and swords and bombs and planes and missiles. And curiously, the people coming from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador don't have any of those. Most of them have the clothes on their back, and well, if you're serious about your Jesus, like these Republicans claim to be, then you welcome the stranger, and you treat them as you would like to be treated were you in the same circumstances. He, of course, chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, so he's going to introduce it in his own committee and then hold a hearing, and then it's going to get voted out of committee, and it's going to be one of the rare things that chinless Mitch McConnell actually allows to get voted on in the new United States Senate of America. It will then go to the House of Representatives and die, because it's vicious, it's hateful, it's mean-spirited, it's ugly, and for people who profess to be followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, un-Christian. Just saying. Of course, these Republicans are Christians, the way that the lions in the Circus Maximus were. So a big FU to Lindsey Graham Mulran. And speaking of the Deep South, from the Department of, well, that didn't take very long now, did it? Comes a decision by a federal district judge in Muzuppistan. Mississippi's latest assault on women and their ability to control their own bodies an injunction has already been heard, and it has been shot down summarily. Judge Carlton Reeves, if you don't know anything about him, you should probably learn a little, is a heck of a jurist. And the case in question is Jackson Women's Health Organization versus Dobbs. Now, you got to understand that it was just last year that a federal court wiped out a Mississippi law whose effect was to say that no woman could get an abortion at around 15 weeks after her last period. It was made abundantly clear that that law was unconstitutional and thus illegal. So the legislature of Mississippi, well, okay, we can't keep them from getting an abortion at 15 weeks. Tell you what, let's keep them from getting an abortion at 8 weeks. I'm sorry, 6. He's trying to keep up with Alabama. Yeah, and this is one of those moments where you'd love to see a federal judge. If you have been told that your 15-week ban is unconstitutional, and then your legislature comes up with a 6-week ban, why shouldn't that federal district court judge issue a rule to show cause for every member of the Mississippi legislature who voted for that 6-week ban, why they should not be held in contempt of court? Because if you've been told once that you can't do it at 15 weeks, that pretty much also takes, not even pretty much, that takes into account a ban at 6. If they were exercising, if they were in good faith, they'd say, okay, not 15, how about 16? But this is 6. Well, I guess members of a state legislature enjoy a certain amount of immunity for the things they do in the course and scope of being a member of the legislature of Mississippi. And so Judge Carlton Reeves didn't do that. But instead, and this was no 30 or 40 page ruling, no. It was all of 8. And you can tell that Judge Reeves is not particularly thrilled with having to even consider it. I've read my fair share of court opinions over the course of my life. This one is titled Order Granting Preliminary Injunction. And I think if Judge Reeves had had the ability, he would have He would have called them morons. But he didn't, because he doesn't want to be overturned on appeal for lack of judicial restraint and judicial calm and cool-headedness. But you get the idea that he's a little bit pissed. This is a direct quote from his order. "Here we go again." 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 words. I don't know if "here we go again" has ever opened a judicial opinion in any other case in the history of the United States. "Here we go again. Mississippi has passed another law banning abortions prior to viability." The latest iteration, Senate Bill 2116, bans abortions in Mississippi after a fetal heartbeat is detected, which is as early as 6 weeks since last missed period. The parties have been here before. Last spring, plaintiffs successfully challenged Mississippi's ban on abortion after 15 weeks. The court ruled that the law was unconstitutional and permanently enjoined its enforcement. The state responded by passing an even more restrictive bill, Senate Bill 2116. And then he sets about, in the space of one simple paragraph, to explain just how stupid this is. "This court previously found the 15-week ban to be an unconstitutional violation of substantive due process because the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that women have the right to choose an abortion prior to viability and a fetus is not viable at 15 weeks. IMP. If a fetus is not viable at 15 weeks, it is not viable at 6. The state conceded this point." Wow. "The state also conceded an oral argument that this court must follow Supreme Court precedent. Under Supreme Court precedent, plaintiffs are substantially likely to succeed on the merits of this claim." And the same rationale would apply to any of these miserable, godforsaken, misbegotten anti-woman laws being passed by a clavern of right-wing Republican state legislatures. If the court follows precedent, as it must, then whether it's Alabama's or Georgia's or Mississippi's, Missouri's or Ohio's or Kentucky's, they all have to be enjoined. Because if the Supreme Court follows precedent, they all fail. But there's a big old if tucked in there. If the Supreme Court follows its own precedent. If it does what the law requires, instead of doing, for instance, what some church doctrine requires. Because that's another nomination for this evening. A statement from Pope Frank. Namely, again, in a New York Times article, Pope Frank says abortion has always been unacceptable, regardless of whether a this is the kicker, because the not viable language there, that's the state of the law in the United States of America. Not viable. If the baby can't live outside the womb, it's mama's call. Pope Frank says that abortion was always unacceptable, regardless of whether a fetus is fatally ill or has pathological disorders. He also urged doctors to help women bring to term even pregnancies likely to end in the death of a child at birth. Pope Frank, who, interestingly enough, as a Jesuit, he is a Jesuit, isn't he? Has a background as a scientist, a chemist maybe? Has declared that women have to carry babies to term even if the baby is gonna be dead the minute it exits her body. Let that sink in for a minute. The woman may very well be told by her physician that this child is never going to live. It might not even take a single breath outside your body. But Pope Frank says, no, she's got to carry it all the way. And she has no choice in the matter. Mercifully, the law of this country has been to the contrary. And yes, it is a matter of substantive due process under the Constitution. It's not some nebulous statutory interpretation issue. Substantive due process under the Constitution of the United States says that a woman has the right to terminate a pregnancy before the fetus would be able to live outside the womb, for whatever reason she chooses. The brutality of a declaration like that made by Pope Frank is absolutely sickening. But what is distressing out of all of that is the fact that we have far too many right-wing judges who would happily do his bidding, his will, not the woman's, be done. But at least we have judges like Judge Carlton Reeves who will answer no. Not just no, but hell no. And we'll stick it in a bunch of men from Mississippi by saying, here we go again. One of the, I don't know, maybe that's something we need to look at down the road. That state legislators are not immune for acts that they perform that are in clear violation of established judicial precedent. Because that's just... Well, that's just legislative hooliganism. Isn't it? By the way, careful if you decide to drop by your local Lowe's. You never know when some maggot is going to be there because he was too much of a chicken shit to go for a couple of gallons of paint without strapping on a freedom protector. Yeah, that happened. It was just another day in Merca. When, well, a guy just, it needed it. We don't know if it was for a bucket of paint or what, but it was in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Hometown of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Yeah, what's that, brother? Hey, well, no, that's not prayer meeting material, doggone it. So many times, Brother Deacon Asa, asking, isn't it a little early in the week to be dispensing prayer meeting material? So often there's overlap between prayer meeting material and this kind of madness. Moran and prayer meeting. Well, that's another one of those Venn diagrams with where the colors merge and so do the circles. But it was Bowling Green, Kentucky, home of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, where dude needed to go to Lowe's. And, you know, you might... You come to think, I mentioned it to Agnes, and she's like, well, of course he took a gun with him. They got all that, they got great big scissors in there that you can just lop somebody's head off with. She was being facetious. A customer, not named. How this isn't a violation of some criminal statute, I don't know, except for the fact that it's Kentucky, Stan. A customer needed to go to Lowe's for something. And, honey, I'll be right back. I'm strapping on my hog leg because I'm going down to the Lowe's because you never know when some shit's going to go down at Lowe's. But I guess he didn't strap it on too particularly competently. Because whilst he was there in Lowe's, he felt the need to adjust his holster. And it was in, we can't get the guy's name, but we do know it happened in aisle 23. An employee said he heard a pop, and then he heard children screaming. Generally not a good sign in Lowe's. You know, if there's a guy with a hockey goalie mask on, it comes running around the corner with a chainsaw in his hand. No, the children were screaming because the amosexual fundamentalist, in the course of adjusting his freedom protector, had shot himself in the... Well, let's just say he wasn't wearing a pecker protector. Of the Kevlar variety. They were a little more tasteful about that over at WKYT-CBS-TV. And they said that the gun accidentally fired, hitting the man's groin and leg. He was reportedly taken to the hospital. His condition is currently unknown because freedom. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Mm-hmm. The police described the situation as saying, "The gun accidentally fired." Passive voice. Not that the man accidentally fired the gun, because that might mean there was a negligent discharge of the weapon, which would mean that the dude would need to be probably charged with at least a misdemeanor, and we can't do that because he's already paid enough of a price, seeing how his groin has been shot. One wonders if he uttered that phrase made famous 500 years from now, "Ow, my balls." We get two instances in this story, and this is a journalism thing. When a gun went off, or when the gun accidentally fired. You know what? No gun has ever fired itself. Ever. To the best of my knowledge. Unless, of course, because he was either carrying a revolver, in which case it's ready to go, just bang. Or he was carrying a semi-automatic pistol with a round already in the chamber because, you know, in the heat of battle in aisle 23 in Lowe's, you don't want to have to pull your Freedom Protector out and then rack a round into the chamber. You want to be ready to go. Got to be ready to go. Because when you got to stop a bad guy with a gun, even if it's a caulk gun, you got to be ready to go. Wowzer. But the gun just went off. Trey with a note. So the guy in Kentucky stand shot himself in the dick. A perfect example of why Matt Bevin will win again. Yeah, maybe Matt Bevin will give him a medal. Meanwhile, via WNEP ABC 16... Dateline Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, Bamavania stand. Pittsburgh in the west, Philly in the east, Alabama in the middle. Hazleton, Pennsylvania, where a fella had a job as a security guard. And not your average mall cop who doesn't get to carry a gun. This guy is a security guard who gets to pack heat. Well, it was about 1 o'clock Sunday. When he was getting ready to go to work. And again, a journalism moment. Police responded after 1 p.m. Sunday to a call that a 13-year-old girl had been accidentally shot on the 500 block of Alter Street. The 500 block of Alter Street is just behind your gallbladder. That's where she was shot, on the 500 block of Alter Street. No, it was a 35-year-old man getting ready to go to work. And the gun just went off. Now, this is a testament to the power of pistol ammunition. A lot of people like to keep pistols for home defense. It's never a good idea. If you got so many fucking enemies that you got to have a gun... Because they're just coming through the door all the time, then you really kind of want a shotgun instead. Maybe some 4-shot or some 6, not even double-aught buck. And that'll get the job done on any home invader, but the shot will pretty much stay confined to the room that you're in. On the other hand, however, when it's pistol ammunition, the bullet went through a piece of furniture and a wall... and struck the 13-year-old little girl while she was in the bathroom. Police at least checked, and they said Daddy did have a permit for his freedom protector. And unlike Kentucky, investigators in PA say that there could be some charges filed if they make a determination that Daddy was reckless or negligent in the handling of his freedom protector. This country. Again, it was either a revolver or the dumbass was carrying a semi-automatic pistol with a round in the chamber. And if you try, if you critique the round in the chamber theory and say maybe it's not such a good idea, the folks over at the National Ruble Association say, why you want to take away his freedom to carry a round in the chamber? I mean, do you know how panicky a situation can be when there's somebody coming through your door? You ain't got time. You ain't got time to sit there and chamber around. You gotta be ready to go. Coming through the door with that big old caulk gun. Jesus. Boy, I tell you what, we just wouldn't be free in this country if it wasn't for folks like him, would it? No. So that pretty much brings us up to the top of the hour. We're an hour into the program. Had $245 to raise. Still got $245 to raise. If anybody would like to help out on this Memorial Day broadcast. Oh, we're going to be busy for the evening. By the way, I mentioned Lindsey Graham, who wants to keep little children in concentration camps for 100 days instead of 20. Well, the 20 days are proven to be problematic enough. And while we're talking about cover, on the general topic of cover-ups among the Trump regime, it was back before the midterm elections when the first little child died in our custody, but Kirstjen Nielsen and the Trump regime covered that child's death up because we didn't want the American people finding out about that before an election, because that wouldn't be fair to Republicans who don't care about little children who die in concentration camps in the United States. Both sides, right? Wrong. Going back to the issue of the fella in Lowe's, Silent R. Lamar says, hey, look on the bright side, Bob. He ain't going to need no blue pill, and he'll probably never get anybody pregnant. You know, if men are, that's a question. If all these Baptist men and so forth are so hell-bent against abortion, why don't they get vasectomies? I mean, it's not like they lop them off. It keeps the little swimmers from going anywhere. Them Baptist deacons and Baptist ministers can get vasectomies, and they can screw around all they want to, and they never have to worry about having to get their mistress an abortion, you know, and pissing off Jesus, because Jesus doesn't get mad about the philandering and the fooling around and the fornicatory behavior. He gets worked up about the abortions. Right. Note from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, remember last week I said when a white billionaire was going to step up and pay off the student loans of the graduating class of his alma mater like Robert Smith did at Morehouse University? Tangentially, Robert Iger, CEO of Disney, received a 7% raise, which amounted to $800,000, which upped his yearly take to $65.6 million. This is one of the CEOs that's been fighting raising the pay of his employees to $15 an hour. $15 an hour gives you a weekly salary of $600 or $31,200 per year. Mr. Iger makes about $1.3 million per week. What I want to know is, what do these greedy bastards do with that kind of largesse, and do they really believe they're worth it? Funny thing is that Mr. Iger is mid-pack in CEO compensation for American CEOs. The CEO of Discovery, the company that owns HBO, pulls in $129 million a year. Somehow these fuckers think a 2% wealth tax above $50 million is too great a price to pay as an American citizen. Shit's gotta change. And it does. Meanwhile, Ron further asks, who's this jagoff think he is? John Wick? Yeah, I know. I know. Going back to Pope Frank, Scott in San Diego with an observation. His dying dead baby policy decree made me faintly recall this. Wasn't there a somewhat advanced culture once that punished certain convicted criminals by chaining them to their dead victim for the full range of their prison term? I can't. The only thing that comes immediately to mind was the story about, and it may be apocryphal, in cases of bribery, the Romans would throw the condemned man into a, put him in a bag with a wolf and toss them both in the Tiber and see who won. Yeah, I know. I had that coming. Wait a minute. Dowhead says, stop telling people how not to how to control spilling their seed, Bob. Yeah. Back to children in cages. I saw this story actually last week and had a feeling it would wind up being relevant. It is an account of the work of doctors Scott Allen and Pamela McPherson. Their professional expertise, these two doctors, is in documenting injuries in detention centers. As CNN notes in its story, they were used to working and documenting the devastating things they'd seen: children's fingers crushed by cell doors, a boy who'd lost nearly a third of his body weight in a matter of days, vaccines incorrectly dosed, diagnoses blown. And they would note these things and they would file them with the United States Department of Homeland Security. The two doctors are an internist and a psychiatrist. And they actually are under contract to the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties of the Department of Homeland Security. And they're detailed to inspect facilities, you call them facilities, we call them concentration camps, where migrants to this country are interned, not buried, interned. And nobody had really heard of these two doctors until they had to speak out and speak publicly as a result of what they were seeing. Now those are things that they had seen before the chlamydia Claudius got into office. But it became manifestly worse once he did. And so the two doctors became whistleblowers. And it is their considered expert opinion that the children we're keeping in these concentration camps, well, that their lives are at risk. Writing a letter to the leaders of the Senate Whistleblower Protection Caucus, they said, "We're writing to you because we have a duty to raise our concerns about the ongoing and future threat of harm to children posed by the current and proposed expansion of the family detention program." You know, what Precious Lindsay was talking about. "Detention of innocent children should never occur in a civilized society, especially if there are less restrictive options, because the risk of harm to children simply cannot be justified." I'm telling you about this now, the 27th day of May, 2019. They wrote that letter in July of 2018. Interviewed by CNN, Dr. Allen said, "Each passing day of continued detention of children and no acknowledgement of the risk that we have reported alarms me even more with every passing day." They've been inspecting ICE facilities since 2014. Here's a question. Generally speaking, on Memorial Day, we talk in terms of people who have given their lives for our country under a military setting. I think every Memorial Day of a young man named Tommy Bennett. He was a student at West Virginia University. He was a Christian, and he was actively engaged in protesting the war in Vietnam. But he spent so much time being an activist that his grades suffered, and he was flunking out of college. And when his number came up and he knew he had to go, he was already registered as a conscientious objector, but he had to go anyway. And so he said, "Okay, that's fine. I'm a conscientious objector. I'll be a medic. And I damn sure won't carry a gun." And he saved a bunch of lives on some godforsaken Vietnamese hilltop. And in the process, got his brains removed from his skull by a North Vietnamese sharpshooter. And was eventually awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor posthumously. He is memorialized in northern West Virginia by having a bridge over the Monongahela, an interstate bridge over the Monongahela River, named after him. But what of the six or seven children who have never marched under a flag, who have never worn a uniform, who died in U.S. custody so that Republicans could feel better about themselves? Is there a medal for a three-year-old who gets exposed to a virus for which she is not at all biologically suited, because it's cooked? It has cooked in a human stew north of the border, and no one in her little village in Guatemala has ever had it. Do we have a medal for her? Do we take a moment? Is there some grave we can go to remember a 15-year-old boy who died of neglect in one of these ICE hellholes? for whom the last remarks upon his life are simply that he was found non-responsive. If he gets sick and gets well and gets sick again and then dies, is there an oak leaf cluster for his medal? Apparently not. The psychiatrist, Dr. McPherson, in the CNN story, who is a whistleblower on the atrocities, it's okay to use that word, atrocities, taking place in our ICE concentration camps. She's been working in juvenile detention facilities for something going on 3 decades and doing so in a place that's not known for how well it treats its kids. She comes from Louisiana. They did 10 inspections at ICE family detention facilities, he said Orwellianly. But no matter how much they documented, no matter how much they reported, the family separations kept going up, not down. What have they found? They found significant weight loss in children that was, for the most part, ignored by medical staff. A 16-month-old baby, they documented, who lost nearly a third of its body weight over 10 days because of diarrhea and was never, not once, provided with intravenous fluids or sent to an emergency room. There was a 27-day-old baby who had a seizure from internal bleeding in the skull, and the staff there at the concentration camp sort of missed that one. Some kids were kept in a facility that had originally been designed as a medium security prison for adults. They had their little fingers crushed. Shattered fingers, significant lacerations. Some of the injuries disfiguring. Because the doors are heavy and spring-loaded. But, again, because we're down the Orwell rabbit hole, these medium security prisons with the heavy spring-loaded doors,
well, they've painted them in pretty colors,
but they're still prison cells. And even after they pointed out the problem, the officials were like, yeah, we'll get to it when we can. And at the bottom of in the final analysis, Dr. Allen says, even if you could pour money and resources into properly staffing these facilities, which sort of presupposes that they're not, and giving them programming, the simple act of detaining and indefinite detention of children is irreparably harmful to children. Responding to the charges, ICE said, nuh-uh. One ICE spokescreep said, pointed out a June 2017 report that said, the facilities are clean, well-organized, and efficiently run. Family residential centers provide a safe location for family units encountered by the Border Patrol as they are processed for release into the new United States with notices to appear in immigration court. And understand, of course, that this is a situation, this is under the current legal standard of 20 days. Imagine what can happen to children if Lindsey Graham gets his way and they're allowed to be kept there for 100 days and more. You know, we have military cemeteries. Now, when I go and visit my family members, we're just in a regular cemetery, but we have military cemeteries. Reckon we should start a cemetery where we just put the sacrificial child victims to the sacrificed on the altar of Donald J. Trump's bigotry, racism, and xenophobia? Shouldn't they all kind of be in one place? I don't mean a mass grave, but when it comes time, if this country ever gets well, and engages in the sort of introspection that we desperately need, maybe we should have somewhere that we can go, or maybe, okay, that's probably, how about a monument? I don't know how many children they're going to be able to maim and kill between now and whenever it is that Donald J. Trump is no longer the president of the United States. But I believe in being proactive on these things. So I think we should probably get started now, picking out a nice little swale on the National Mall and getting the design competition on for the memorial to the killed and maimed children sacrificed for the aforementioned bigotry, xenophobia, hatred, and racism of the Trump regime, and, you know, Republicans generally. Maybe it could even have a Bible verse, you know, suffer the little children to come under me, and it could we could put the word suffer in all caps. Meanwhile, our buddy Steve in New York, Steve being a lawyer, is good at parsing words. Dr. Allen, the whistleblower doctor in this case. See what Dr. Allen did there? Dr. Allen said no civilized society would do this to children. That leaves the United States out. Well done, Steve. Well done. Not a cowbell, because it's not funny. But definitely well done. Oh, and big thanks to Rusty. Rusty got us down under $200. We got $195 to go. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you very, very kindly. Hopefully some other folks will jump in alongside of you now that you got things started. Randy in PA says, introspection isn't the conservative strong suit, and obligatory Star Trek quote, the illogic of waste, Mr. Spock. Wasted lives, wasted resources. And so we've taken care of our obligatory Star Trek reference. Phew. They do pile up over the weekend. They certainly do. On the lighter side, because that was pretty heavy. On the lighter side, let's travel back down to Talabama, if you will. I know we've spent a couple of weeks focusing on the desperate, seething, burning hatred that mostly white men in Alabama have for women, and their boundless desire to tell women how to behave, how to live, what to do, when to do it. But among the evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals, one of those things that really, really, really gets them all head up, is marriage. Marriage between one man and one woman. A traditional Christian family values marriage. Well, not anymore. As of this past Thursday, the House of Representatives of the state of Alabama has voted to end the requirement that two people trying to get married in a traditional Christian family values marriage, or any other sort of marriage, will no longer have to get a marriage license. Insert here various jokes about cousins and sisters and uncle daddies. But no, the Alabama legislature is trying to solve a problem. Because, see, ever since the Obergefell decision by the Supreme Court of the United States, it has been legal for one man to marry another man, and for one woman to marry another woman. And this has caused no end of problems in Alabama, because you have to go to your probate judge to get your marriage license. And mostly white, mostly male probate judges in Alabama don't feel too kindly about the idea of having to give one man and another man a marriage license. Now, when it comes to giving a one man and another woman a marriage license, sometimes your probate judge he'll hesitate a little bit, and he'll think on it a little bit, and then he'll say no, but he gets to enjoy thinking about it a little bit. Well, no more. At least not if the Senate finishes the job. Because as of last Thursday, with the House passing the bill, now it's going to the Senate, it will no longer be the law of the state of Alabama that you have to have either a marriage license or a wedding ceremony. Oddly enough, you know who's having a hissy about this? Whoa, son of a gun, the Senate's already done the job. Now it's on Kay Ivey's desk. I wonder if every marriage is a precious gift from God. Probably not. Especially not them Homer sectional ones. Are the Baptists up in arms about it? Nah, not really. Church of Christ? Not so much. Pentecostal holiness? Mm-mm. Church of God and Christ? Sorry. Because when it comes down to weddings, they realize they can do as they please because there are no religious requirements in the law about weddings. No law of any state can say a blessed thing about how a religion goes about carrying out a wedding. But no. Weddings are big money. And I was about to say big money in the Deep South, but you know what? I don't know of anywhere that weddings aren't big money. I recently heard a term, in fact, I heard Agnes use it, talking about how stressed out women getting ready to get married, planning a wedding, you know, either small or large. I had no idea this term existed, so don't hold this against me. But apparently women planning a wedding can get kind of stressed out and a little bit hateful. And the term for that, maybe you already know it, is bridezilla. You know, because you got to pick out the flowers, and you got to put down the deposit for wherever it is you're getting married, and you got to figure out, you know, who's got shellfish allergies and who can't eat a peanut, and what kind of godforsaken halfway to a burlap bag you're going to stick your bridesmaids in so that the bride will shine so much more brightly than them. Weddings are huge business. And so, critics say it provides cover to biased judges and harms the wedding industry. The wedding industry. You suppose all that palaver in the Bible and in various other holy texts about how you go about joining one man and one woman or what have you, you suppose that was done on behalf of an industry? Well, yes, it probably was, because the priestly class was an industry. Whether you're swapping 16 donkeys, 27 sheep, 3 camels, and a couple of burnt-out roosters for the bride-to-be, or whether it's something of a more modern flair, somebody has to officiate. What I find interesting out of all of this, though, is that instead of simply telling probate judges to follow the law and taking action to remove probate judges who will not follow the law from office, the Alabama legislature thought instead that it would be a better idea just to get rid of marriage licenses. And so instead what happens is the bride and bride, or groom and groom, or the groom and the bride, all they do is they put together an affidavit and they have a notary sojack sign it saying that they witnessed the signatures, and they file that affidavit with the court to make the wedding official-like. This, of course, the evangelicals are blaming on the homosexuals. And we haven't heard from you in a while, but in case you doubt me, I have proof. Get the hockey puck.
Yeah, move them in Congress now, in government all over, starting to spread around the country. You have a homosexual, radical homosexual, running for president. And no one seemed to care. No rebuking him. And he even flaunted his so-called husband with no shame, kissing in the public. And people applaud like it's real. They call a man husband. Like,
I've just got a question here. Is kissing in the public anything anywhere near kissing in the mouth? Just because I don't know. Oh, okay. Thanks for the cultural update. Ron in Raleigh says Bridezilla was a program on one of the women's channels. Well, I just kind of giggled a little bit when I heard it, and that must be why it was popular enough to go on TV. Ron asks, what are they going to do, jump the broom like they did in Roots? I remember an old Robert A. Heinlein novel once where the protagonists get hitched. And I don't know if he made it up or if it really did come from olden times, but there was a sword laid on the ground. The book was written around 1963. And the verse used was, leap rogue and jump whore and married be forevermore. Back to Jesse Lee.
It's real. It's shocking. And that's what they want to do. And I'm being told that they voted in a black radical lesbian homosexual for mayor of Chicago. And I have those sound bites coming up for you, too. Supposedly she kissed her so-called wife. So now they outwardly calling two men husbands and two women wives. And the straight people are calling their relationship partners. The radical homosexuals started out calling their phony relationship partners. And they convinced the straight people, don't say girlfriend, boyfriend, or fiancé, or husband, wife. Say partner. And so the straight people, as weak as they can be, said, okay. Now they call partners, while the homosexual has taken over the term husbands and wives. It's mind-blowing. It's just hard to believe.
I think a lot of things are difficult for Jesse Lee, but we'll leave it at that. But homosexuals have taken over the terms husbands and wives. Because, you know, ever since the Obergefell decision, Agnes never refers to me as her husband anymore. And I don't call her my wife. Generally, I refer to her as the woman who every morning for 26 years has miraculously still been in the same bed when we woke up the next morning and has not run screaming into the daylight going, you! Right. Oh, and it being Maureen Monday and everything, by all means, let's check in with Chip Roy. I think our buddy John Bridivo alluded to this on Friday on the front porch. Chip Roy, who back during the, whose hearing was it? He's a member of the House. He was lamenting how seedy the hearing was and said he told his wife how badly he wished she was just back home in Syphilis Springs, Texas, with her, and said, don't look, Ethel, at the hearings. But it was too late. So the latest effort by Chip Roy from Dribbling Dick, Texas, is a hissy that he's having holding up disaster relief from places like Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the Arkansas River has been flooding great guns. Levees that were 70 years old were on the verge of, if they have not already, collapse under the rising floodwaters. There in Hominy, Oklahoma, Kimberly Lawless McCauley, age 31, said, there's been nothing even remotely similar to this for decades. She got 4 or 5 feet of water in her 3-story house last Monday and Tuesday. When they finally got back in, her couches were still floating. Well, enter Chip Roy as of Friday, standing on the House floor to block flood relief for places like Oklahoma. Because he said a flood relief bill, a disaster relief bill, that didn't have money in it for putting children in concentration camps, well, he couldn't be part of that. Yeah.
For what purpose does a gentlewoman from Florida, Michelle, seek recognition?
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to take from the Speaker's table the bill H.R. 2157 with the Senate amendment thereto and concur with the Senate amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Texas seek recognition?
Reserving the right to object.
The gentleman is recognized.
I am here today primarily because if I do not object, Congress will have passed into law a bill that spends $19 billion of taxpayer money without members of Congress being present here in our nation's capital to vote on it. Secondly, it's a bill that includes nothing to address the clear national emergency and humanitarian crisis we face at our southern border. There's no reason this disaster supplemental should not have included the quite modest $4.4 billion that Director of OMB Vogt sent to Capitol Hill to ensure DHS and HHS do not run out of money, which they're slated to do, while managing the over 100,000 illegal aliens crossing our border.
We're back. He's still at illegal aliens. I know he was pining for it. And I really do. I wish he would have stayed back in Chlamydia Creek, Texas with Ethel. Jesus. Is the Rio Grande in flood stage? It could be. But he doesn't want flood relief for his state. He wants bigotry money. For the same people who crush the fingers of little children, who leave them to die unattended in their concentration camps. That's what Chip Roy wants the money for. $19.1 billion in disaster relief could have been going out to the several states, even as we speak, including Republican Oklahoma, except for Chip Roy from Gonorrhea Gulch, Texas. They desperately need the money for relief from Hurricane Michael and Hurricane Florence. There's other money in the package for tornadoes and other floods. But let's not pretend that this is all on Chip Roy. He wouldn't be standing up there if he didn't have the howdy-do from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California. Well, I tell you what, that's some fine family values these Republicans got, aren't they? They're just swimming in it. And here, coming up on the beginning of the third hour of the program, we still got $195 in fundraising to do. It would be mighty helpful if we could knock that out. And in the meantime, there's the question because I presume you're aware of this. Now that Donald Trump has announced that he wants Jim Comey to be executed along with Andrew McCabe and Carter Page and Lisa Strzok and anybody else whose names he hears on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Well, for some reason or another, they're still having Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags on the TV box. And she says that it's entirely up to Bill Barr to prosecution whether or not to begin that process.
I want to ask you about the decision to give the Attorney General this unilateral authority to declassify intelligence. The order says the Attorney General should consult with relevant agency heads, but not that he has to. Why did the President not force the Attorney General to consult with the DNI and the head of the CIA? Here he's giving them unilateral authority not to do it, only saying he should do it, but he doesn't have to. Why?
The President.
Man, I got to tell you, that is one piercing question from Chuck Todd.
The President has total confidence in the Attorney General and his ability
but not
to
the
make
intelligence
those decisions
community?
We expect. Certainly, that's why we expect that the Attorney General will consult with them on matters that he needs that guidance and advice from them. Certainly, they work in lockstep on a number of things. I don't see this to be any different. The bottom line here is there was a lot of corruption at the FBI and the DOJ. We see constantly more and more things that have come out of that. And the President wants transparency, and he's given the Attorney General the ability to put that transparency in place, make those decisions, and we're not like at all concerned that the Attorney General is not going to do everything that is necessary to make sure we're protecting important intelligence that is vital to our national security.
I'm trying to understand what outcome the President expects. He tweeted the following: my campaign for president was conclusively spied on. Nothing like this has ever happened in American politics. A really bad situation. Treason means long jail sentences, and this was treason. Why did the President ask the Attorney General to do an investigation if he's already come to a conclusion, already decided what the penalty should be, and I think has already determined what the jail sentences should be? Isn't this the President already playing judge and jury and putting his thumb on the scale here for whatever investigation he claims he wants Mr. Barr to do?
That's pretty rich coming from the media, who relentlessly covered and accused the President for over 2 years of being part of this massive election interference, something that never took place. The idea that anybody now says that the President doesn't have the right, and not only that Americans deserve the truth, to push back and find out where all of this started.
Now hold the hell on, Marvelline. The election interference that never took place. Now, all you have to do is cursorily read the Mueller report, and you'll find out that there was lots of election interference going on. Everybody's in agreement about that. Hell, even Precious Lindsay will tell you that the Russians meddled in the election of 2016. But not Jeff Reen here. Nope, it didn't even exist. And I mention this, I bring up this clip primarily for one reason. One, it made me hoot like a barn owl when I saw it live. And two, Jim Acosta over at CNN has a book out. I'll bet you in the grand scheme of book hustling, if I tried hard enough, I could probably get Jim Acosta on this program here to talk about his book. He'll be doing the book talking circuit. You know, those transactional interviews where everybody acts like they're all friends and everything. And by the way, buy my book. I don't think I'll do it. But one of the more interesting passages in the book is where he sort of pulls the curtain back and gives us a picture of the, there's that word again, transactional nature of Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. And when I say transactional, I mean like at the strip joint, when the dancer will come up and smile at you and act like she just thinks you're the most wonderful thing in the world, as long as you're putting dollar bills into the garter around her leg. Transactional. Well, what Jim Acosta says in his book is that after she goes round and round with members of the multimillionaire for-profit media on the White House beat, that she will then be later seen schmoozing and drinking with the same people that she was calling out from the podium as being the media that has attacked this president for 2 years. One, what's a good little Baptist girl out doing out slinging drinks with the enemies of the state? And two, why are members of the Fourth Estate schmoozing around with a woman who has been proven in the Mueller report to be a goddamned unrepentant fucking liar? Why was she booked on Meet the Press? Really? Because she's not speaking any truth there. And there was another one of those moments where she attacked the media for pointing out Russian election interference. God damn, some of it's all wrestling, isn't it? It really is. Down to the Armory Friday night, and the Blue Marvel will beat the Red Death. And then Saturday night, it's another Armory, and the Red Death will beat the Blue Marvel. Wrestling. Am I mistaken, or was there a time in this country when a journalist who went out hobnobbing and drinking with the administration might have found him or herself not being a journalist anymore? I'd like to think such a time once existed. Consider Hogan Gidley. Hogan Gidley is the deputy press secretary for the White House. He went on TV to talk with Howie Kurtz, who is not exactly a piercing interrogator. And in speaking with Kurtz, he described what his perfect world would be like. Among other things, they talked about the way that Trump was described as having a goddamn temper tantrum, throwing a fit on Nancy Pelosi. And since he was on Fox, and since he was talking to Howie Kurtz, he let it all hang out, and he said that there in the White House, they think it would be so nice if we had a complicit, compliant media. You know, like TASS, or Pravda, or Zvestia. Or maybe the press that they've got there in North Korea, where Donald Trump thinks that it's just fine as frog's hair that Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants has a low opinion of Joe Biden. A low opinion, which of course they both share, and the Tangerine Tiberius tweeted about. Wrestling. But you got to give them credit. You give them a talking point, and a Republican will run with it as far as they can get. Liz, daughter of Dick, showed up on TV this weekend, where she declared that Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page sure did, well, here.
Do any of the things we were elected to do, and instead continuing these attacks and partisan investigations, partisan issuance of subpoenas.
And the president attacks back. Is that the right thing to do?
Look, I think that, you know, what we have seen, if you
look at retweeting these videos, that
I think what is really crucially important to remember here is that you had Strzok and Page, who were in charge of launching this investigation, and they were saying things like, we must stop this president. We need an insurance policy against this president. That, in my view, when you have people that are in the highest echelons of the law enforcement of this...
Just one little thing about all that business. These Republicans make it sound like those are contemporaneous statements. Those are email exchanges between a couple of people who were sleeping together who weren't supposed to be. Well, probably not getting a lot of sleep. And they were texting back and forth to each other about it. But they were not doing so at the time when they were on, had anything to do with the Mueller team. Remember, Strzok was up to his eyeballs in butthurt emails. This fecalith, Liz Cheney, makes it sound like that they were just churning away while they were working, but they, no.
Nation, saying things like that, that sounds an awful lot like a coup, and it could well be treason, and I think that...
No, goddammit, you idiot, it could not be treason. Treason is levying war against the United States or giving aid and comfort to its enemies. And this does not fall within that definition, even remotely. But again, she's got a talking point, and she's going to pull it like a little red wagon. And meanwhile, her daddy, Count Dicula, is sitting at home, just ever so proud of his baby girl. Assuming that is his baby girl, and he doesn't keep her locked in a pit, and it's actually him in one of those Mission Impossible rubber masks. Because she sure as shit sounds like him. Wonder what she gets done for the people of Wyoming. Do you ever ask yourself that question? Probably not much. She sure doesn't deliver health care to the people of Wyoming. She doesn't make sure that the people of Wyoming have enough to eat. She doesn't do anything for education in Wyoming. No. Mostly she's just a pathetic shill for the hydrocarbon industry. Because she's got hers, and fuck a warming planet.
We need to know more. We need to know what was Jim Comey's role in all of this. These people reported to him. Andy McCabe reported to him. What was Comey's role in that? And that is what the Attorney General is going to be focused on.
Let me talk about this, because you saw what the president did with Attorney General Barr. He said he could declassify all this intelligence. Do you worry that sources and methods might be revealed? Do you have any problems with him saying declassify this intelligence, even though he won't give the Mueller report and unredacted Mueller report to Congress?
Look, first of all, the Mueller report has been delivered to Congress, every single piece of it that could be within the law. The amount that's been redacted that's available...
Nah, bullshit. Every single piece that could be within the law. No judge has passed on any portion of the Mueller report.
That means that the complete Mueller report has not been delivered to Congress. Plain and simple. All that grand jury bullshit from Bill Barr, I can't just release that. No, dumbass, you can't. You go to a court of competent jurisdiction and you ask them for the permission to release it. It's not like it hasn't been done before. Yeah? Yeah. So, in essence, just to sort of cut to the chase, the daughter of Count Dicula, like Count Dicula himself, is a liar. And cannot be trusted with the truth for the fear of the vulgar, violent, and filthy things that she would do to it, as demonstrated here. Preet Bharara, formerly the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, was so disgusted by this that he tweeted, "She knows it's not true. This treason talk. Knock it off." Yeah. Here at the beginning of the third hour of the program, if we could knock down $195, that'd be great. And in the meantime, because I know, among other people, Rusty would love to have some company. In the meantime, let's run over to the phones and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob. Happy Monday to you and yourn.
A contemplative and respectful Memorial Day to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Where to start? About Liz Cheney, as you know, there are proverbs and there are proverbs, but one in particular seems to apply quite aptly to her. The road apple doesn't fall far from the horse's ass. And I think that's about as succinct and complete as you're going to find on a Monday with no mail delivery today and stuff.
True enough.
Okay. It was awfully nice to hear old Jesse Lee Peterson again.
Well, we hadn't had any Jesse Lee in a while. I felt like it was called for.
The original Smash Mouth Pumpkin himself. And you mentioned 16 donkeys hailing back to the old traditions of arranged marriages.
Yes.
Wasn't that a song by the Crests? Back in 1958?
I don't know. Did you look it up first? I mean...
No, wait a minute. I'm thinking of 16 Candles.
Okay, sorry. Yes. Well, because up until not very long back in Western European traditions and going on to this day in other traditions, weddings, don't get pissed at me, weddings are property transfers.
Yeah.
The father owns the daughter and trades the daughter to another male in exchange for other property.
Yeah. Cows and goats and land and...
Just, you know, no pigs.
And Bridezilla. Now, did someone write and say that that was the...
Yeah, that was a TV show that ran for God knows, like... I got a... 12 seasons.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Bridezilla.
Never saw the first episode of it. I just heard Agnes use the word, and I got a giggle out of it.
Well, back in my day, see, the brides-to-be go up. You're right. They go absolutely batshit crazy.
I'm not making any judgments.
Well, no. I will. I'll step right up. But
Direct the hate mail to Scott.
Back in my day, we didn't call them Bridezilla. We called them catalog hags.
Oh, Jesus, and, you really are trying to get the hate mail. Hag? Well, you're going to drag that out? You're going to don't do it.
I'm sorry, Bob. You bring these topics up and they bring other things to mind, you know? You know?
Well, resist the triggers.
All right. All right. I do have I got some TV tips for you in a little while, but I do have kind of a serious query regarding the people, especially the children, but other people on the border who get a less than warm welcome from the U.S. of A. And it prompts a question. It's a serious question. These places down in Central America and Northern South America where these folks are trekking from, and it's a hellacious trek. I can scarcely imagine the absolute unmitigated hell that these poor people go through to get all the way up here, you know, just danger and turmoil every step of the way, only to be greeted with a less than warm welcome. And I think that's putting it rather kindly. What access to news and information do they have in their home countries? Certainly there have got to be reports saying, don't go, because that way lies madness and danger and horror. And it made me think back, and I forget the documentary that I saw a while back about the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl movement of what they called the Okies and other people from the central part of America migrating west because there was nothing there for them on their home turf. And somewhere prompting the trek of the Okies were these colorful flyers emanating from somewhere saying, jobs, 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 come to the beautiful West Coast for jobs, jobs, jobs. And I forget who was responsible for those flyers, because there are precious few, if any, jobs to be had by the thousands and thousands of Midwesterners who made their way.
Well, I thought you were going to refer to the that iconic photo of men who were out of work standing next to a sign that said, out of work, keep moving, there are no jobs for you here.
Yeah, well, and I've seen that too, but the question becomes, are there people down on the home turf of these people coming up to be greeted poorly at the border? Is there a modern day equivalent of flyers that say jobs, 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 or is it word of mouth, or what the hell is prompting them, aside from the wretched conditions, to come here thinking that there's going to be, you know, welcome?
Are you suggesting the wretched conditions are not enough?
Well, no, there are plenty, but certainly on some level they've got to be aware that it's not a thing to do in today's Trumpian society. I mean, it was bad enough before Trump came along. I don't know. I just, you know, you talk about these things, and I have trouble really getting my head around the mindset behind.
Well, see, what Lindsey Graham was referring to when he said, word on the street in Central America is that if you come here with a minor, you'll just get right in.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
This is a slanderous lie, and it also partakes of anti-Semitism. Because remember, those elderly people attending the Bris at Tree of Life Synagogue, who were slaughtered by a right-wing proto-Nazi, he was triggered by right-wing broadcasting mentioning, what was it, the Hebrew Immigration Society?
Yeah, I remember that.
And so that shit is spread about in the corners of the internet that neither you nor me nor any other decent people frequent. And it's all part of the massive Jewish conspiracy
by which we are going to replace white America with Jews and brown people. And the Jews will rule the brown people and control the money and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So no, there's no flyers. The conditions themselves, largely the result of U.S. foreign policy, are plenty wretched enough to drive these migratory patterns. And if you will forgive me for wandering off into the weeds of ancient history, there were no flyers in 60 BCE when violent pressure from the Germanic tribes put the Gallic tribes on the move.
There were tell me again when that would have been?
60 BCE.
Oh, way, way back.
Yeah, they went on the move, and that's what triggered Caesar's Gallic War. Because human beings under pressure engage in flight. They generally don't stick around to be slaughtered. And neither you nor I have anything approaching a bone-deep understanding of what a horror it is to hear the gunshots in the night and walk out your front door the next morning and see your next-door neighbor's kid with his brains all over the pavement because he wouldn't join a gang.
Well, we have a form of that in South Central L.A. and in parts of Chicago and other urban areas. I mean, it's not, I don't guess it's as severe. Maybe it is as severe.
No, it isn't. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. You and I have nothing approaching an understanding of it. We can mention any portion of the United States we want to, but it does not begin to approach the hell and horror of these countries. Again, you know, we're not getting Costa Rican refugees because they're a nice, stable little democracy with no standing army. We're getting them from the places that we have previously fucked up royally: El Salvador, Guatemala, yeah, and Honduras. And to a lesser extent, I guess, Nicaragua.
All right. Is it a poor presumption on my part that the current misadministration has at least some communications going on with whatever governments there are down there? I guess where I'm going here is, can't some sort of coordination between the Trump misadministration and these other governments down there, can't something be worked out to inspire or suggest strongly to these folks not to come? Okay. Or maybe Trump and company have skipped that step and aren't.
No, they went in the opposite direction. They said things are already shitty where you are. Since people are coming here from your shitty country, you know, remember he called them shithole countries.
Yeah, I remember.
We're going to decrease the aid coming to you. Because
Trump's not lifting a finger to prevent the people from coming because it serves his interest.
Yes, this inures to his benefit because it provides, you know, red raw meat for the maggots to feast on. In everything but a literal sense, they are blood-drinking freaks, these maggots.
Well, there is that. There is that. I read about these things and see the coverage on television, and it troubles me greatly that things have gotten to this state that. And maybe that's the way it's been throughout history, that the lower classes or countries or whatever, at least in the minds of some, are nothing more than pieces on a game board moved by an invisible hand or something. We can do better, I'm sure, but not now, not under this regime, I guess, is the bottom line here.
No.
Oh, and you were you were asking, just as a side note, about was there ever a time in this country when journalists were not so cozy with the establishment? And there may have been a time when it was less prevalent, but it has always been the case that access is the byword in the world of journalists and people in power. And there's always been some level of coziness. And I scratch mine if you'll scratch, I'll scratch yours if you'll scratch mine, sort of thing. I'm pretty sure that I'm right on that. And I saw Sarah Sanders the other morning on with Chuck Todd, a total waste of airtime, in my estimation. Neither had anything new to say. Nothing got answered or resolved or looked at in any meaningful way. And maybe it was a holiday weekend and they have trouble booking guests. And they had to kind of scrape the outer regions of the barrel or inner regions of the barrel, whoever books that show. And shit, Bob, anybody who tunes into that expecting anything more than what's presented or anything different than what's presented is on
I realize it's not gilding the lily, but the beating a dead horse, I guess. He's terrible. I mean, for those of us who thought Disco Dave, what's-his-face, was terrible, Chuck Todd defines it downward.
Yeah. Well, he was next in line for the gig. I mean, old Tim Russert back in 08 had to have his heart attack him fatally, and that left open a chasm. There for a while, they had old Brokaw. They trotted him out to anchor it until they could figure out what to do. It's not comforting, and it's not encouraging, the current state of things, media-wise.
Well, the thing is, why, as I asked earlier, why is anyone booking her after she has already been proven to be, and I mean proven, demonstrably so, within the pages of the Mueller report, to be a pathological liar?
Well, it's hard to book shows like that on holiday weekends. Everybody goes to the beach, up to Wilmington, not Wilmington, but Rehoboth Beach or Ocean City.
So, rerun something. I mean, it's not like MSNBC hasn't gotten by for eons on prison porn.
Well, yeah, but this is the over-the-air network, and the affiliates pay for the privilege of airing Meet the Press, so-called, and they have expectation.
Well, look, this morning my filthy little habit. I got a rerun of Meet the Press from 6 to 7, and from 7 to 9, I got canned interviews on the set of Morning Joe.
Oh, well, you don't expect him to come in on a Monday fucking holiday,
right?
Bob,
just
now, do you?
No, I'm hell. I'm one of the few people who are live today.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point I'm making is plan in advance. Interview a senator, interview somebody, and just run it, because that bullshit was meaningless. I mean, it's tripe, it's garbage, it's worse than it. Put up a test pattern.
Well, I'm lucky to have caught it anyway, because out here on the West Coast, if sports are coming on later in the day or midday or late morning on Sundays, they will either preempt it out here or they'll put it on at 6 instead of the usual time of 8 or 8:30 or whatever it is. And luckily, my
DVR wasn't that, it wasn't surely to goodness, given the time zones, maybe there was a good
Afghan head in the bag polo match or something going on that they could have run.
But
at this point in time, anything involving Sarah Hasselbeck's sandbags is absurdist theater.
Well, see, now there is one thing for which to be thankful, Bob, and that is that Conway, what's her name?
Kellyanne.
Conway. What's
Kellyanne Conjob, yes.
I think they didn't some of the networks ban her for a while?
They do, and then they lift the ban because somebody gets a call, and, you know, one of the suits who, that, you know, one of the Herb Tarlicks gets a call, and then, oh, we don't appreciate that.
In his plaid coat and his plaid pants, yeah, and his white shoes and belt. Well, let me segue on over to TV tips, because I don't think that we're going to be able to figure this other stuff out. It's just too deep. And by deep, I mean like bullshit type deep, that we dare not tread any further into it, because we may not be seen or heard again. But I came across some of the most amazing things on Amazon Prime over the weekend. One is the great mid-70s Sidney Pollack-directed film starring Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway, 3 Days of the Condor.
That's a good one.
Oh, God. Back when I had TCM, whenever it was on, it's one of those films that no matter how many times I've seen it, I always like seeing it. And that is on the Amazon Prime lineup for anyone who's never seen it or hasn't for a while. Oh, it's a great film. But one of the other things I came across, well, first on YouTube, have you ever imagined what Larry King was doing in 1974?
I think I know, but continue.
All right. As I recall, he was on a radio station in Miami. I believe it was WIOD AM, with a regular program during the week. But apparently, for some amount of time, he had a weekly news/interview program on WTVJ, I believe, is the NBC station in Miami. And I found a 1974 42-minute video of Larry King, and it's worth it just to see what he looked like in 1974, interviewing a rather interesting character, a futurist by the name of Jacques Fresco. And if you go onto YouTube and put Larry King and Jacques, J-A-C-Q-U-E, Fresco, into your search thing on YouTube, you will be delighted to see this interview from, 45 years ago of Larry King and a futurist talking about society of the future. And there are more recent videos with this guy, Jacques Fresco, from the mid to late early 2000s and then into the 2010s, where he's kind of revised his estimation of what the problem is and what the solution might be society-wise. And these videos are well worth a visit. This man is and was a visionary, and I don't know how many of his
By futurist, I mean, there aren't any aliens involved, are there?
No, I don't believe he mentions aliens once.
Okay, I'm just, you know, skeptical.
Yeah, but anyway, they were quite interesting to watch those videos. But that wasn't the most fascinating video that I saw. Going back again to Amazon Prime, a 1975 theatrical release starring Harvey Keitel, starring Jimmy Boyd, who some may remember as the young singer in the early 50s who sang a version of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, starring Bert, There She Goes, Miss America, Parks, and starring the musical group Earth, Wind, and Fire. Now, you might be asking yourself, Bob, what could possibly draw this collection
waiting to hear the title.
Of people of talent to a theatrical enterprise? A 1975 film, That's the Way of the World.
Okay, there's the Earth, Wind, and Fire tie-in.
Yeah, record industry mobsters make an executive, Harvey Keitel, push a boring family trio instead of Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's not an award-winning film, but I'm telling you, Bob, you'd have to go a long way to find anything quite as entertaining as Harvey Keitel, Burt Parks, Jimmy Boyd, and Earth, Wind, and Fire. You'd have to get up pretty goddamn early in the day to catch something like that. But if anybody's got Amazon Prime...
Well, you mentioned Futurist, and it reminded me of a story I saw this weekend. Agnes pointed it out to me.
Okay.
There is a lecturer in Korean at one of the universities in the UK. And he, I don't know what teaching Korean has to do with, but he's developed his own personal theory that alien-human hybrids are living among us right now. And
wait a minute, that sounds like David Icke.
Well, it sounds like he's working Alex Jones's corner too. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, that's monkey jellyfish hybrids. Wait a minute.
Well, wait a minute. Weren't there seahorses involved?
No, that was the senator from Utah, Mike Lee. Giant 8-foot tall seahorses that are going to carry people from Hawaii to the mainland. Yes. And see, that's the response. What you just did is the typical response. It's funny.
Yeah. Well, it's but wait. We don't need acid in today's society.
No, wait. You have to sort of, dare I say, open your mind. No, because I don't think there are human alien hybrids out there. But you have to look, you have to read the story and see the way it's reported and what's behind it. Because one of the reasons he says that the aliens are here to breed with the humans is to create a human that will be better able to tolerate climate change.
Oh, dear. Now, where might one find this guy's videos?
I don't know that he's got videos. I just read the story about him.
Now, what's his day job?
He is a lecturer in Korean at some university in the UK.
All right.
I'm kind of looking here to see if I can find it. Hello, Chirps. Ah, there it is.
Okay.
NBC News headline: Space aliens are breeding with humans. University instructor says scientists say otherwise.
Wait a minute. NBC News?
Yeah.
It must have been a slow fucking news
by
day.
By Seth Shostak of NBC News.
Huh.
One, as someone who was once taught to practice the dark arts of journalism, I read a headline like that and Agnes has to keep me from throwing my phone across the room because I can't afford a new one. Because we sit there, you know, she texts me stories, and I read them on the phone. You know. Space aliens are breeding with humans, university instructor says. Scientists say otherwise. Let's assume for a moment, Scott, that you're a copy editor. Would you ever let that headline out of a computer inside your office?
Well, it depends on what my publication is. Am I the weird, wacky
Your NBC
news
or... goddamn news.
Okay, no, I don't think so, unless it was a kicker. And even then, I don't know.
How about scientists say, university instructor who says space aliens are breeding with humans is nuts? Well, that might be a little bit libelous, but there's got to be a better way. And, you know, this is a puff piece. Maybe you've never seen any space aliens, but recent polls indicate that up to 6% of Americans claim to have been abducted by them.
That ain't news. The
experience. How many percent?
6. 1% of the population's in prison. 6% thinks they've been abducted by an alien.
And how many voted for Trump? What percent? And how much?
Well,
of
but wait. This is terrible. The experience doesn't sound pleasant. Really? Why? Maybe they have Frisbees and wheat checks. I mean, Jesus Christ. The extraterrestrials are often said to take their captives to their saucers, lay them out on a table, and extract sperm from the men and impregnate the women.
Oh, dear.
Do you think the men and the women can... I mean, we've kind of got that part figured out. It is, after all, an overpopulated planet.
Well, how to account for this? I do remember the Hollywood
film, The Shape of Water.
Okay.
We are four paragraphs in when we finally get to... We get to the beginning of a sentence that begins a paragraph, and that sentence begins with "but," which, again, further proof, no copy editor. But an instructor at the university, remember, somebody was paid to write this. But an instructor at the University of Oxford in England believes the abduction, believes,
yeah,
the abductions are real. Young Hai Chi, who teaches Korean at the university...
Wait a minute, is that in reference to his age, or is that his first name? Young.
God damn it, Scott. Yeah, you've been... You've been doing... You're pushing the envelope.
People need to know, Bob. People need to know.
Young Hai Chi. Yeah, I take it his first name is Young Hai. Who teaches Korean at the university. Also claims to know what the aliens have in mind. In lectures given at the university, in Korean class, he teaches Korean, you know. In lectures given at the university, he says they're creating an alien-human hybrid as a hedge against climate change. To support his unorthodox theory, even Chirps isn't buying this. Chi notes that for several decades, the number of reported alien abductions has risen. And it continues from there. But when I said that you've got to keep your eyes open on this shit, right there is what I meant. As a hedge against climate change. Now, you don't have a single atom of climate change denial in you, Scott.
No, not at all.
Nor I. But for the people who read this sort of a news story, they go, oh, wow. Because we are in an existential crisis. Climate change is that. I mean, could be the end of humanity as a species sort of crisis. And every time an article pops up that casts the reality of climate change in doubt. Now, see, this says that it's a hedge against climate change, so it sounds like the guy acknowledges that climate change is real. But if you provide some cockamamie answer for how human beings are going to survive it, and it's going to be because we've been buggered by aliens, in this case, then does a little bit of damage to the effort to actually address climate change. And that shit drives me crazy. Because we're not going to have a magical solution. Some engineer is not going to wake up or jump out of the swimming pool yelling Eureka and run naked through the streets because she's just figured out the great big answer to it all, and so climate change is nothing we have to worry about. We need real-world solutions to a world, or at least a civilization-ending problem. And, I mean, this isn't an old story that was datelined April 1st.
Well, if it helps, I may have a little bit of background.
But at the end, it closes with, but still, you might want to check your 23andMe results. Maybe you're already a hybrid.
Oh, dear.
Goddamn.
Well, okay, two things. When you said the names, the guy whose byline this was, Seth Shostak, it rang a faint bell, so I Googled him, and it turns out he is connected with the SETI, S-E-T-I Institute, which I believe is that outfit who's got big radio telescopes trying to listen for
the first thing Agnes thought of was the Charlie Sheen vehicle of many years ago called Arrival, in which the aliens arrive here having fucked up their own planet, and they need to heat this one up so they can live on it. And so they're pumping climate change gases into the atmosphere in Mexico. Well, I guess I've just ruined Arrival for anybody who's never seen it. Well, it's 20 years old, so too bad.
The other thing, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, several years ago, late 2015, for several months, I did some producing and guest retrieval for a guy who had a nightly radio program via internet, a fellow named Richard C. Hoagland. And if I'm not mistaken, we had this guy Shostak on or tried to book him. I forget which it was. Because Richard is really into, he wrote a book some years ago in the early 90s, The Monuments on Mars, City on the Edge of Forever or some
Elvis's
stuff.
Face in the Mountains. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So, and how I got hooked up with him is a long, complicated story, but the relationship did not last long. But I certainly got an earful of really far out provocative guests, because they are playing to a certain and to an extent. Old Art Bell, the late Arthur Bell, used to play to this same group of folks, and it's amazing the shit that you'll believe.
Right, and you know, if I had seen,
in the dead of night, okay,
if I had seen Coast to Coast as the webs, the URL on this, I'm like, okay, NBC News.
Yeah, that's telling, and a rather somewhat disturbing too. I mean, GE doesn't even own them anymore. Now it's Universal. Now what possible gain could they have down the road? Maybe a film along these lines. Doesn't Universal Studios more or less own what used to be the National Broadcasting Company, LLC, or...
Well, it's Comcast Universal, I do believe.
Okay, well, yeah, I knew Universal had a hand in it. So, I mean, they're using, just as GE was using the news division, or trying to use the news division, to pump up their armaments industry, you know, beating the battle drum for the Iraq invasion and all that other stuff. You know, maybe that's what Comcast Universal is up to. You know, don't be surprised if there's a movie along these lines, you know, 18 months, 12, 18 months, 24 months down the road.
Speaking of don't be surprised.
Yeah.
It's pretty much graduation time all over the country these days.
Yeah.
And no different for this past weekend at the United States Military Academy on the heights above the Hudson at West Point, New York.
Mm-hmm.
The commencement speaker for this graduating class, which incidentally was the most diverse graduating class ever in the history of the United States Military Academy. Well, the commencement speaker...
And I sincerely hope that the commencement speaker was someone worthy of that assemblage. Because that's a pretty
awesome
responsibility
your heart, Scott.
To send these young souls off to whatever's next for them.
Like I said, I'm gonna break your heart.
I think that, but I'd be wrong. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. The commencement speaker was none other than religious maniac Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek.
Oh, for the love of shape shifting aliens, Bob.
And I don't know if he told them, as he did the goobers at Jerry Falwell U, that they're going to have to be persecuted for their religious liberty. But he did tell them the following. It is a virtual certainty that you will fight on a battlefield for America at some point in your life. You will lead soldiers in combat. It will happen. Some of you may even be called upon to serve in this hemisphere. Never mind the fact that we've got lots of soldiers and officers serving in this hemisphere at various and sundry military bases all over this country. But what he was telegraphing there by serve in this hemisphere is serve in this hemisphere somewhere besides the United States, probably Venezuela.
Well, I was thinking that.
And, you know, these are all freshly commissioned second Louis. So these are people who are nominally in command of a military group. I don't know my military units. But being as how they are wet behind the ears and have nothing but mostly textbook training, the best thing they can hope for is that they've got a few sergeants underneath them who are experienced and can keep that unit from getting slaughtered, given the circumstances.
It's another thing to consider, Bob, that this graduating class of 2019 at West Point, a good number of them were barely born in the wake or in the lead up to the events of 9/11, okay, they were likely much too young to be paying much attention at Operation Iraqi Liberation. Oh, wait a minute. Operation Iraqi Freedom. And what they've heard about it has come out of books and whatever exposure to other information they've had. So it's a whole new crop of people sitting there in great expectation, waiting and watching Mr. Pence talk about you may be called upon, ... Jesus, what a fucking racket, to paraphrase Smedley Butler. And ain't that what it is, Bob? The military, industrial, congressional, intelligence.
War is a racket.
Yeah, there you go. Jesus. Well, you've thoroughly depressed me.
I do it every time.
Here, I was going to cut into my big old Memorial Day watermelon later, spread out the newspaper, and just dig right in. And here, I don't even want to.
Well, here, let me lift your spirits a little bit.
I wish you would.
With a little something-something. Because Steve from Georgistan isn't around and haven't heard from Todd, so let's go check in with the fine, fine shut-ins who get up every morning and watch Washington Journal. By the way, thanks going out to Jenny in Wisconsin. Thank you, Jenny. That takes us down to 170 to go. Thank you, Jenny, very, very kindly. Hopefully you and Rusty will get some company in the next 16 minutes or so of the program. That'd be mighty helpful. There's a last little pain in the ass end of the month bill to pay, and it's driving me batshit. Let's check in with Washington Journal, because there's such fine, detailed, nuanced political analysis there every morning.
California, good morning. Welcome to the program. Good morning, sir. First of all, I want to take my hat off and salute our chief and commander, Mr. President Trump. God bless him and thank him for such an awesome job he's doing. My question is, I want to know why Clinton was allowed to...
Chief and commander? Isn't it commander in chief? Well, maybe he was maybe he was nervous.
A moment of nervous dyslexia, Bob.
Yeah.
Sometimes the fax machine prints out the poor reproduction of the talking points.
Right. Back to Kelly in Santa Clara.
Abandon our soldiers and get the people killed in the embassy, and she hadn't been charged with treason. That's my first question. The second question is, don't the people of the United States get tired of hearing the propaganda from the Democrats, the way they dummied us down so much that we can't even see the truth when it's in front of us? Our education is so sad that you ask a child about the Constitution, they don't even know what the Constitution is.
Meanwhile, I'm sure that Kelly in Santa Clara absolutely knows that the Constitution contains the words "under God," and makes clear that we are a Christian nation.
I think it's time that our teachers should be start teaching about the Constitution. And then we should be going back to a floating system. When fuel goes up, everything else goes up. When the fuel goes down, everything else goes down.
Thanks for the call from California.
Thank you. As Donald Fagan once sang, I wait all night for calls like these.
Well, out here you have to, because Washington Journal comes on at 4 in the morning out here. And runs for 3 hours. What was old Kelly? Was that his name?
Kelly from Santa Clara, yes.
One wonders what kind of weekend that boy had and what he was imbibing to bring up those talking points. Okay. Good God.
Well, that was the other thing. There was just this transition that was so seamless, you may have missed it. One minute it's about we need to be teaching civics, and the next thing is, we've got to have a floating system when the cost of fuel goes up, everything else goes up, and when the cost of fuel goes down, everything else goes down.
Well, we kind of have that, don't we? I mean,
what the actual was that even? I mean, that's hoist the bottle of cheap tequila stuff. You need to teach propaganda from the Democrats. We're dummied down. Dummy.
Maybe his MAGA hat is too tight.
A mite too tight? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that leads me to...
So if he's watching that at 4 o'clock, in 4 a.m. in Santa Clara, it could very well be the end of his day as opposed to the beginning of it.
Well, I didn't want to say that, but yeah, that's kind of where I was, where my thinking was. Well, the thing about a floating system with prices and fuel and different things like that, also tied into Trump's tantrum regarding marching out of an infrastructure meeting with a pre-planned tizzy, hissy fit, whatever, last week. Another item I saw on Amazon Prime was a documentary from last year, year before last, 2017, Be Prepared to Stop. Now, what would you think that would be about? Well, I'll tell you, Bob. Be Prepared to Stop is a documentary about our round-the-clock reliance on the Great American Highway and the countless big rigs rolling down them that bring us everything we use every day. But those roads and bridges are failing while government is at a standstill. Be Prepared to Stop explains the issues and aims to energize stakeholders to push for solutions for safer, better roads. Well, if you watch this film, Bob, and I recommend it. I saw it and I put it on my list, and I was in a certain mood last night where I said, well, okay, I'll watch it because I think there's something in here for me. I am glad that I don't drive anymore. Okay, I'm fearful that what travel I do on the roads is on a bus, and that's a couple of times a week, either the bus or the trolley. And after I watched this, I was surprised to think and to marvel at why there aren't more bridges collapsing, like that one up in Minnesota about 10 years ago with a bunch of people killed. And there was one in, was it Ohio or West Virginia or Kentucky that they were pointing out? That the damn thing just crumbled, and the buck was passed. You couldn't pass the buck fast enough.
Where'd you go, Scott?
Am I there?
Now you are.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is a film worth your time, because the amount of money and planning that we have going for us in terms of infrastructure, roads and bridges and things, is a dismal pittance compared to, China, Europe, other advanced nations. And once again, it's a case of being left behind as we've crossed over the crumbling bridge, Clinton's crumbling bridge, into the fucking 21st century. We're almost two decades into the 21st century.
And it's not turning turning out as advertised, is it?
Oh, hell no. Hell no. So anybody with Amazon Prime would do well to watch this film. And I'm sure that the trucking industry had some input. But we rely on these people to move the merchandise. And they were talking about, even in today's internet economy, where you go on Amazon, you buy a couple of boxes of stuff, it's the bottom line is it's got to get here. It's got to run that final mile. And that's the difficult mile. They can fly it in from some far-flung point and send that to the distribution house and then load up the trucks. But those trucks have got to make the final mile from
right
there to your house.
And I don't know what's in the documentary, but that's a conscious decision, because once upon a time we had these things called railroads, and the railroads had things called spurs, and the spurs went to every little town in America, and that last mile could actually be covered by a horse-drawn wagon.
Yep.
Who had a guy sitting on a bench driving the horses, who was called a teamster.
Yeah. Yeah. And my Uncle Fred, on my mom's side of the family, was head of the Railway Workers Union. I forget the actual name of it. Back when that was a strong, vibrant union, representing and operating a strong, vibrant industry. We're talking 50s. Into the early 60s, before the railways were overtaken, you may as well say, by the highways. And all of this is laying at the feet of the politicians who will not exercise a simple principle known as maintenance and pay as you go. I mean, our highway system at one time, good God, that chopper's flying awfully low. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think they're coming for you, Scott.
Jesus. The ghetto birds are flying low tonight, Bob. You're in beautiful San Diego. But my point is isn't that what they're called in urban slang, ghetto birds?
No.
I've never heard that from many quarters. Well,
that
I'm
sounds
just
really
you.
Sketchy, man.
Well, no, I've heard it. I've heard it, you know, from people on the right, but also people who live underneath the flight patterns in places, you know. God, I forgot where I was going. Oh, yeah, just the fact that rather than upkeep a good highway system over the years, they've been passing the buck, passing the responsibility, putting off maintenance, okay, to the point where to fix it, to bring it back up to code, so to speak, would cost way, 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 way more than they would have been paying had they paid all along. Because you got to remember the effect of inflation on dollars, okay? And ketchup is always, not the condiment, but catching up is always more difficult than taking care, as I learned with housekeeping here in the last several weeks. It is much easier to do it and keep it neat and tidy as opposed to letting it go, letting it go, letting it go, and then trying to
catching up is always harder than catching up is always harder than keeping up.
Yeah. And I knew this on some level, but you know how people get, or you know how I get. But anyway, I didn't mean to go on a speech about the highway system in America, but it is a clear and present danger is what I'm saying. And meanwhile, you've got this, you know, monumental asshat throwing a hissy. And I don't know if it got lost in the reporting, but what isn't it a fact that he can't sell a $2 trillion infrastructure program to his peeps because they don't want to spend? That's the problem all along. They don't want to spend anything for this. They love this country, but they apparently don't give a shit for the people or for the systems that the people have to operate in and under.
Well,
and
I think I think the best distillation of what you just said is to note that if we say everybody in the country should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, the Republican mm-hmm. response is, but how are we going to pay for it? Okay. If you talk about
there
the fact that our roads and bridges are crumbling and we need to have a viable transportation system for the 21st century that's based on renewable, sustainable energy, the response is, but how are we going to pay for it? Want to get your war on with Iran? That's probably going to require a damn draft and trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars. What do the Republicans say? USA, USA, USA.
Well, bring it on. Bring it on. Well, and I'm telling you, man, there comes a time when a tipping point gets reached. And I don't think hybrid alien human people or entities are going to be of much help in the solution finding department. You know, if that story is to be believed, they're not here for that purpose anyway. They're here because they trashed their own planet or whatever. I mean, Mars, I've seen the pictures, doesn't look too habitable. Although some say it may have been at one time a lovely paradise as the fourth planet out from the sun.
I have a hard time believing that just because of the distance and, you know, how warm could it have been?
Well, I'm with you on that.
Right, but I get that. And just one last thing on the way out the door. Once he leaves Japan, remember, tiny fingered Tiberius is going to go to UK, and he's going to meet the royal family, including Princes Harry and William, who are well aware of what he Trump said about their dearly departed mama.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, that once again, back when he was just pure money for Howard Stern, he said, "I think I could have nailed her. She was actually really beautiful. I thought she was supermodel beautiful. She had times when she didn't look great, and she had times when she looked better than anyone in the world." And so, that being the case, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm only saying that I would completely understand it if those two young princes decided to take a swing. Because I gotta think that the UK is not that far different from Merca, insofar as we have, you know, we have the unwritten, I mean, law, as we express it down south. Don't talk about mama.
Well, the folks who brought us Brexit, which
if one of them was to just casually swing a leg out and watch him go ass over tea kettle, You know, I don't think it would. I don't think it would have to be an international incident, because anybody can understand that talking about talking shit on your dead on your dead mama is probably actionable.
Well, yeah, but does he have a following in Britain? I mean, given the fact
they
voted.
Oh no, no, no. Yeah, yeah. The same ugly little fascists who voted for Brexit. I mean, there's not a lot of different. There's not a lot of difference between a Brexiter and a maggot. Just not. Hey, I got to get out of here, Scott. We're at the top of the hour.
Well, I see that you do, Bob, by the old clock on the wall. Thank you for a fun call. I mean, it was for me, and I hope it was for you and the Horn family.
Always is. Always
but,
is.
But check out those viewing tips. I think you will get some good stuff.
Yeah, this weekend, from all just of them. Because I started watching the George Clooney version of Catch 22. I went and watched the
theatrical film is on.
Yeah, I went and watched the original.
It holds up, doesn't it? I mean, for the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, Buck Henry's fingerprints are all over it.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, that cast. Back then you had to cram everything into 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And that book cannot be crammed into 90 minutes.
Who all was in that? Orson Welles, Alan Arkin?
Alan Arkin,
Bob
Martin Balsam, Buck Henry. Yeah, Orson Welles, Charles Grodin, Art Garfunkel, Bob Newhart, Anthony Perkins, Norman the tremendously talented Norman Fell.
Oh God, yes. I gotta watch that tonight. I saw that,
and a couple of names, a couple of faces that you immediately recognize the faces, but you have to go look up the names.
Who?
Got to go look up the names. but there's no
yes, I know.
But there's no way a film can ever capture the entirety of that book, because it's done with such. First of all, it's stream of consciousness. Your first read through will probably It's a little confusing.
Well, there are two books that were written by World War II veterans. One was Catch 22 by Heller, and the other was the one, the brilliant novel by Kurt Vonnegut about the Dresden.
Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, that is him coming to terms with his own PTSD.
Yeah. God. This is a very literate show, and we've got a very literate audience out there who like good cinema and like good literature and like good political discourse. Not that there's a lot of it in the world today, but where there is any of it, you'll usually find Horn family members milling about and chiming in.
Right.
So.
And.
But anyway.
And it was good Memorial Day viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Scott. Bob, later now.
Take care and have a nice rest of your evening and a dynamite week, as they say.
Well, thanks. We'll be back tomorrow night. Take care.
All right.
Later.
See you, Bob.
And that's our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Some simpatico coming from up over down under via Robert in Australia. A bit of wind and the power's out. Don't feel alone, Bob. A bit of wind here at 2 p.m. on Monday, May 27th in North Ryde, Sydney, and the power's gone out. I'm beginning to wonder about our infrastructure, as it's the third time in 5 months. I think I need more battery-powered devices. Might be handy to have some battery backups, that's for darn sure. No doubt about it. Ron in Raleigh says my honorary black card may be in jeopardy because I did not recognize Ghetto Bird. Okay, it just kind of made me feel a little queasy. So that's where we'll end things this evening, this Memorial Day evening, 2019. Thanks to Jenny and Rusty for jumping in this evening. Hopefully you'll get some company from the overnight crew, and we'll knock out that $170. If not, $370 tomorrow. That's okay. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.